Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, welcome to and welcome back for my regular listeners to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is a pleasure that you have chosen to invest this time to spend with me, either live or listening to the archives or the MP3s. So my first question is for those of you who listened last week to my interview with Robert Israelite on responsible global citizenship, is have you taken an action this past week? And hopefully you did, and have made a small step towards making a bigger difference as a responsible global citizen, and we thank you for that. Tonight, I always say I'm excited about my guests, and it's true because I only have amazing people as guests on my show, and I want to introduce you tonight to my guests. Her name is Lisa Hanneberg, and she is an expert in the areas of management, leadership, and personal and organizational success. Lisa consults in the areas of organization development, management and leadership training, and human resources. Lisa has written 9 business books and offers integrated training solutions and individual and group coaching services. She's an enthusiastic, fun presenter, speaker, and she's available to address a variety of leadership and management topics. So tonight we're going to talk about her new book, Hip and Sage, among other things, how to stay smart, cool, and competitive in the workplace. And from what I have heard of Lisa, hold on to your seats because we're going to laugh, we're going to learn. It's going to be a wonderful 45 minutes that we have together. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Melanie. What a setup.
Well, I know you'll live up to it, so it's always easy.
That's great.
So tell us about Lisa Hanneberg. Who's Lisa?
Well, I like to think of myself at the core, like if I could spend every day doing what I think I should be doing, I'm a breakthrough catalyst. So whether that happens through consulting or with my cats or with myself, I like to help people sort of skip forward.
Well, skip, that's bigger than step.
That's right.
Sounds more fun. Leap.
Yeah, and leap would be even better.
Oh, well, and I would agree with that whole leap idea.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, as I was reading that you have, and unfortunately, and I'll share with my listeners, I have not read Hip and Sage as yet. I'm looking forward to reading it. I didn't realize you had 9 books out because on my list, oh, I know why. It's because I only had the original 8. I didn't have a new one. I was like, okay, sure.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
have one. So I've had Rita Emmett as a guest on the show, and she has a Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship. And there are people who have that book inside of them and just aren't quite sure how to get it out. So if you can think back to that first book that you wrote,
mm-hmm.
It's 2005, I believe.
Right.
What inspired you to actually write that book?
Well, I will tell you, I was a procrastinator, too, for several years. So 2005 is when I finally got it out. But I have to tell you, I struggled myself. And the reason I wanted to write a book, and perhaps it's similar to why many of your listeners might want to write a book, and I do believe everyone has at least one good book in them, is that all throughout my college and early work, I'd get people who'd say, you're great at this, you stink at this, you're great at this, you stink at this. But the one thing that people kept saying again and again was that the way that I was able to explain things seemed to make sense to people. So I thought, okay, if I seem to explain things in ways that make sense to people, I should spend more time delving into that strength of mine because it's also interesting to me. And middle management was the one area that I thought we have – so few books that do a good job of explaining it, I thought, okay, I can add value there. And so that's why High Impact Middle Management finally came to being in 2005. But, it took me several years to to get with it and get on the path and get focused and get doing it. And then from there, I learned how to do it. And obviously, since then, I haven't had quite that problem.
Well, and you do have a way, both with writing and speaking. I'll share with listeners, I met Lisa, oh my gosh, it's been 2 years already, at an ASTD conference, which is American Society for Training and Development. And it was a blast to listen to her. It was fun. She has great stories. And she also is a good writer. And that's not always a good combination for people. They're often strong in one or the other. You're strong in both. Do you have a preference for speaking or writing?
I would have to say that I am by nature an introvert. And so I like to write every day. And so I could not speak every day. I would burn out. That said, there is nothing like the one-on-one conversations or the small group conversations or even the medium-sized group conversations like the one that you saw at ASTD, where you can somehow connect with someone in a different way because of the way you told a story or because of, you know, a particular thing that you were able to share. And so I would have to say I have the most amazing moments when I speak, but I can't have too many of those and not go completely berserk.
Well, and it's good to know that about yourself, too, so that you are taking care of yourself and able to still be your best self in both realms. So from your first book, which targeted middle management, do you still prefer writing for middle managers?
Well, I think it's still an audience that needs a lot of help. And here's what I mean by that, Melanie. I think that great middle managers are the engines of our organization, and they don't get a lot of help, and their job's only getting more difficult. And for those of you out there who have management jobs, you know your jobs are broader, they're more complex. So I do like to continue to communicate with that audience because I think they need it, and honestly, not a lot of other people are paying attention to them. That said, I also, like my 2 weeks to breakthrough book was more of a personal book. It's for individuals. I like to try and connect with people at all levels of their life because I think when you can have success, when you can be focused in an action, when you can feel great about what you're doing at work, it affects home and vice versa. When you are really building the right kind of life you want at home or at school or with your kids or whatever, it actually affects your work. So I do like that audience, but I like other audiences too.
Well, and that's a great segue into, as I was doing research for our interview, I, on YouTube, just put your name in and to see what came up because some people have little excerpts, and I found your 2 weeks to a breakthrough presentation, which is awesome. And so, you know, you just, if you go out, listeners, and go out to YouTube and just type Lisa Hanneberg, you'll find this wonderful about a little over three, well, the actual musical piece is about 5 minutes. I think the whole piece
That's
is
right.
20. And so you can enjoy the words to the song and some great visuals and be inspired. So the question, Lisa, is how did that project come about? Because that's neither your speaking or writing per se. It's a great way to think about the idea of breakthrough.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say there's a really interesting story to that that's also very important to me because the song that is behind all those beautiful pictures was actually written by my brother. And so the song is called Breakthrough, and it's a wonderful song inspired by my book, 2 Weeks to Breakthrough. So first of all, one of the things I thought was really cool was I think it's the first song that's been written for a business book. So that was kind of fun. And when that book was coming out, 2 Weeks to Breakthrough, the whole notion of that book is to help people get unstuck. So we all have amazing things we want to do, and we all have busy lives, and very often we put things off. And so what I wanted to do was to offer some very simple ways that we can get unstuck, stay unstuck, get into action in small ways that mean big things. And I thought, you know, it would be kind of interesting to put this to music because it's a magical message. The notion of going to bed every night feeling good, focused, and in action is a magical thing. And luckily, the nice thing about it is that it's a very simple thing if you do a little bit every day. And so I thought, you know, it would lend itself to music. Now, I happen to have a brother who is a singer-songwriter. He's a computer programmer by day, but his real love is folk music. And what was interesting is I wrote him a note and I said, hey, just, you know, I thought I would just check in with you. I'd like to have a song that goes with this book. Are you interested? And I happened to catch him at a time in his life when he sometimes suffers from seasonal depression and things, and he was actually sort of in a down place. And so he said, yeah, you know, I actually that would be a project I'd really, really enjoy. And so I sent him the book because, of course, to write a song about a book, you have to read the book. And so he read the book, and the book is about how to generate breakthroughs and get what you want in life. And he wants to have a great album, a folk album. And so what's interesting is he wrote the song, and the song actually generated a breakthrough in his singing and songwriting. And the song Breakthrough at that moment in time was his breakthrough. And it, you know, he said when he sent me this just lovely note, and we are not a gushy family, so it was like out of character. And he said, you have no idea how this has affected my life. And I was like, you know, those are like the moments that, you know, you can count on one hand, and you're like, wow, I wrote a business book and it helped my brother. And so he, you know, then I had a friend who put pictures and video to it, and we all created it. But the bottom line story is, you know, when you just sort of think about it and you look at it, the reason why the words and the pictures go together so well is what. Hello, are you there?
Oh yeah, you disappeared. All because all of a sudden it's wet, and we had this little.
And so the reason why I think that video works, Melanie, is because his breakthrough is coming through in his words and his song. And just to give you the end of the story, that was the beginning of his new album. He has since recorded 10 more songs in an entirely new method with new band and backup singer, and it's the best work he's ever done.
Wow.
That was cool. Yeah.
That is very cool. And it also, I think, speaks, too, to when we're focused outside of ourselves on helping someone else, it's sometimes easier to do things than if we're trying to do it for ourselves.
Right, right. Absolutely.
But yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. It was wonderful. And so on that subject of inspiring, what inspired you to write Hip and Sage?
Well, my own fears of irrelevancy is really the bottom line of that. So I'm the final year of baby boomers. I was born in 1964. And, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm yesterday's news. And so I have a need to understand how people communicate, how they collaborate. I need to understand the new ways. And it hit me how the actual individual spark for this book was about 4.5 years ago. This is before I have a blog now that'll turn 5 years old in August. So it was actually about 5 years ago. And I was at a gathering, a Fast Company gathering, the magazine, and I heard people talking about blogging. They were talking about their blogs and everything. And I'm just sitting there, just stoned, you know, inside myself going, oh, my goodness, I have no idea what they're talking about. And so I got up the courage in that meeting to say, could you please tell me what you're talking about? And there were a couple people there that were just so sweet, and they gave me this 30-minute tutorial on blogging on and why it was an important thing that they were doing to build their business. Well, at the time, I was an individual consultant. I needed to build my business, too, and I didn't know anything about this. And so I went home that night, created a blog, started blogging, and from then on, I said, I will never be left behind again. And I know that there's a lot of really smart, hardworking folks out there who are feeling left behind. And I don't mean just from technology. Being hip is not about knowing the latest tools, although knowing some of the latest tools is helpful. Being hip is about how do you connect and communicate in ways that people are connecting and communicating today. How can you communicate with people who are 30 years younger than you? Can you collaborate in the workplace using today's preferred methods? And not only just methods, not even tools, but as you know, like with Twitter, we now have conversations that are 140 characters long. I mean, we don't write longhand anymore. So it's not just about the tool you use, but it's also even about how you approach communication. So in any way, that's a long answer to your question of how this all started, but it started with my own fears.
Well, and sometimes that's a good place to start, because when we take on those fears and do it anyway and decide that I need to learn myself, and in the process, because of your talents as an author, you can share with others, so we don't have to fall in the same potholes that you discover in your process.
Yeah, so, that's right. And, you know, fear really is the major barrier here. There was a recent study done with folks who are sort of staying away from Web 2.0 tools and from all the online stuff. And when they were asked the question of why are they not more familiar with it or why are they not interested in it, it was fear. And what's interesting to me is it's a fear that's misplaced, because a blog is not going to bite you. It's not going to infect you. It's not going to, you know, it's a fear that's based on, I don't want to look bad. I don't want to feel behind. I don't want to be slow. I don't want to not know what to do. And but what's interesting is there's a lot of what we would call hip stuff or today's tools are so easy. We think back, you know, I don't know how old you are, Melanie, when I think back when I was first starting my career, when I was in my 20-something, this is when laptop computers were actually in suitcases. The first compact laptop, like, you know, portable computer was a suitcase size thing. It was this gargantuan thing. And, you know, when we had computer programs, they weren't easy. You had to program it. You had everything. And so the lovely thing about it is, for many of us who learned how to use computers the hard way, if we actually get on and try some of these things, we're going to find that they're easy peasy, no problem whatsoever, because they're so intuitively built, and all we have to do is click buttons these days, and all of a sudden you've got this wonderful social network site built.
And that is, and of course there's that balance between using it advantageously and the risk factors. And I think when the terrible news stories hit, that fuels people's fears about putting too much information out there, or communication challenges that happen when you're only communicating in the written word and you're losing the verbal and not tone and the nonverbal imagery. And so they stop there rather than looking at, well, are there other ways? Because there's more than just Facebook and MySpace and Twitter.
Yeah, that's right. And I do think we do need to be smart. I mean, whatever we write online, we should expect that anyone's going to find that, including spouses, including parents, including employers, including all of those kinds of people. So I do think we need to be smart about what we put out there. But the other real important point that you mentioned, Melanie, is that very often this is about how we can communicate and build relationships. And we don't have, although we don't have that personal touch that is so nice, what I found when I did my motorcycle tour around the country that year that you and I met is that I met a lot of blog readers who had been reading my blog for a couple years. And, you know, when we met face-to-face, we did know each other. So I'd also like to challenge people on that, if you really share who you are in your writing, which I try to do, you know, in the blog posts or in even in 140-character Twitter, who you are can come through if you are comfortable with who you are, if you're transparent, if you're informal.
And so although being in person certainly gives you another dimension, we should also not shortchange what you can do with the written word when it's more of a social and informal tool, like a blog or something like that.
Well, and that's a wonderful point, because you can develop connection with people through the written word. It's like a faster version of pen pals from years ago. You get a pen pal in Australia, but it just took weeks to get your responses back.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly what it is, and that's really a good metaphor.
Well, thank you. I do have those from time to time, and I appreciate the feedback. And see, you are a great person to interview, because you lead right into questions that I have. Okay, motorcycle tour. I know that was on my list of questions. Can you talk a little bit about that motorcycle tour, because that's a different way to combine your passions, because you have a passion for riding motorcycles as well as your passion for your riding.
Yeah, so, you know, you could say in a way I cheated because I did two things at once. But really, this again was for that 2 weeks to a breakthrough book, which to me was a very special thing. And I wanted to reach more people in person. And one of the dilemmas these days of the, you know, the traditional book tour, very few authors even do book tours because they're not very successful. And if they do, they basically go to the same big city. So New York, San Francisco, L.A., Seattle, et cetera. What I wanted to do is I wanted to reach the people who already know me, my blog readers, et cetera, and they're not necessarily in those places. And so I thought, okay, well, I like motorcycle touring, and it's an easy way to get from point A to B. You don't have to worry about airplanes and all the costs that come with all the flights. And so I sent a note out to 80 people who were very active blog readers. And I said, if I come to your city, will you help me get people to a reading event? And whenever someone returned that email and said, yes, I would love to help you, I put a pin in the map, and that's where I went. So it was an example of going where the energy is. And it was a blast, because I did not know where I was going until they told me. So I went to Fargo, for example. That wouldn't have been necessarily on my list. But it was a blast, and I had so much fun, and I met such great friends. And I can't wait to go back.
Oh, awesome. And it also gave you interesting material to write in your blog, which is called Management Craft.
Mm-hmm.
It's an intriguing title. How did you choose Management Craft as your blog name?
Yeah, well, I have to say, as I mentioned, it's going to be 5 years old in August. And had I known now what I know then, I don't know that I would have called it Management Craft, because I get so many Google hits for people looking for crafts,
like
paper and scissors and scrapbooking. But that said, the reason I call it Management Craft, and I say that I would change it, and Jess, I really do like the title, and I think it's important. The reason I called it Management Craft is because I believe management is a craft. It's something that you develop over time, because management is about how do you help people do their best work. And people are amazing, flawed, enigmatic beings, and it takes a while to figure them out. And it takes more than a lifetime to figure them out. So Management Craft is about how you develop your craft of management over time. And so I really believe it's a lifelong endeavor. I consider myself a scholar of management, and scholar means student, so I'm going to perpetually be studying management. And so that's why it was called that.
Very, very cool. And the fact that it's been around for 5 years is also pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's about 500 years in online years.
Yes, especially. How regularly do you write, Lisa, on your blog?
Oh, you know, I have spurts, but I would say if I were to average it out, I'd say these days 2 to 3 posts a week. But I have spurts. I just did 5 in the last 2 days. So,
well, there you go. And I know there's been some question recently, and I don't remember the source, if it was from Leo Laporte or if it was from another source, with some research about blogs that 95% of blogs had not been updated in the last 60 days.
Yeah. You know, and we all start them, and that's just it. It's just like, you know, with anything, with exercise or with eating right or with learning a foreign language, you really do have to keep at it.
And I think that's important. Do you think that there's a shift to things like, or resources or tools like Twitter, that people are putting their time and energy there as opposed to blogging?
I think the people who are blogging, well, I think for a particular type of blogger that is true. And the type of blogger that I think that's true for, Melanie, is the one that's doing it for fun. And what I mean by that is that there are different kinds of bloggers. So, for example, Management Craft is where I share stuff about management. And I do Twitter, by the way. And I also Twitter about business and management and occasionally motorcycles. But I can't actually get out full concepts there. So Twitter would never be a good replacement for me. But some people blog to say, hey, here's what I'm doing in life. Here's I'm updating people. And Twitter could be a pretty decent replacement for that. So I think you'll find that people who are looking for a place that's doing more of the personal journaling or just really wants to share quotes or meet up with friends, that Twitter might be the alternative. The other group of people that I see on Twitter, which I'm not so happy to see on Twitter, are the people who are trying to market to you because they love it. They can, you know, do these 140-character Twitters all day long and, you know, keep duplicating them. And so it's a real spammy place. So I do think that some people are going there, but I think the people who are doing blogs for their purpose of sort of having like an online newsletter, particularly for business, I don't think that Twitter's a replacement for that. Now, I think you will see a shift of some of those bloggers going to social networks.
Because?
Well, because, so there's blogging, there's podcasting, which is audio, there's vlogging, which is video, you know, uploading video, pieces of video, there's discussions, so creating discussions, and then there's, you know, different forums and groups. And what's interesting is that a social network has all of those things. So, for example, I started a social network called Management Central, just 3 days ago, by the way. But what it has is, thank you, because again, I fear irrelevancy, so I have to keep going. So, but for example, in like a Ning social network, which is a real easy free one to start, you have blog posts, you can upload video, you can upload podcasts, you can have a blog role. So what it is you can have everything you have in your blog, plus you can have all the interactivity stuff, and posting pictures and videos and things like that. So I think that you might see, particularly for a company to have like an internal social network as an informal learning strategy, I think you're going to see a lot of talk about that. And so if someone right today were considering, well, maybe I should start a blog, what you want to do is you want to say, why are you doing it? What is it you want it to achieve? And weigh the difference between just starting a social network and starting a blog. Presumably, you'd want to start a social network if you really want to have a network of people. In other words, you're trying to attract people to it. For some people, blogging is more of an individual pursuit, which is fine. Like, they're not so worried about who's reading.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if you had a social network and nobody was there, that would feel kind of lonely to me.
Yeah. But and I think, though, that's one of the exciting things about the technology is it does allow us to connect with people anywhere.
Yeah.
And so we don't have to just think locally, and we can share. You know, it's exciting because I have listeners from around the world who listen to Spark.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's awesome to connect with them either through emails or Nick called me. He has a show in Australia. And he called me on my show one night. It was like, whoa. It was really nice to talk to him. But speaking of which, we have 15 minutes left, and I need to give out a phone number in case we have any live listeners with us. And as opposed to dead listeners, I don't know. But, I mean, people who are listening to our interview live, the number is 347-215-8390. So if you have a question for Lisa, I know when I promoted the interview on Twitter and Facebook, I had mentioned that you were a management guru. You're a guru of several things, but management is one of them. So if people listen to this, they download the podcast, and which they do, how would you recommend that they reach you if they have questions they want to ask you, Lisa?
Well, the good thing is that my main sort of portal website is just my name, lisahanneberg.com. But even if you can't remember that, if you can remember Management Craft, you can. It's managementcraft.com. So it's very, very easy to find me. Even 2 weeks to a breakthrough, you could throw that in Google, you'd find me. Hip and Sage, hipandsage.com, you'd find me. So almost anything that's memorable about this conversation, if you threw it in Google, you'd find me. That's the cool thing about having blogs, because Google loves blogs. So if you were to Google Lisa Hanneberg right now, there's like hundreds of thousands of hits, which is great.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that with blogs. That would work. That is true.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited because I'm learning a lot because and being at a point of thinking about starting a blog and what you just shared about social networks, going, I'm thinking I'm shifting to doing something new.
Well, you know what you should do, Melanie, is check out, and if you go to my blog, you'll see there's a link to the Management Central, this new social network site that I just put up 2 days ago. So there's right now I only have 50 people in my network, but they're 50 cool people, so I'm like really happy to have them, and the network will grow as it grows. You know, I don't have any particular goals about it, but the reason why I'm suggesting you go there, this just happened. I got a note early this morning from a guy who joined the network, and it was his first time ever being in a social network, and Ning is a very easy one. He just sort of perused around it, and he said, wow, this is really cool. And he started his own network last night for his church because it was so easy. So, you know, what you may want to do if you think you might be interested in starting up your own social network, find one that you're interested in and become a member of it and then start messing around inside and saying, well, I can do this, I can do that. Because the thing about the network is that everyone can, and anyone can upload a video, anyone can share, anyone can do a blog post. So if you have a network, it's not just you blogging, it's your whole network blogging. So
wow,
that's kind
of
cool.
That's a lot of synergy from like-minded people.
That's right. That's exactly what it's for. Now, if you think, well, geez, I kind of want to be the blogger, then a blog might be the right thing for you. And personally, I have no intention of stopping blogging. That's a different venue for me. So, you know, for some people, both might be the answer, or some people, one or the other might be the answer. But go ahead and check it out, and I would encourage anyone listening, if you're curious, just join one. There's probably social networks on any interest area, even like crocheting. I'm sure there's a crocheting network out there that they're all talking about techniques. I mean, I think there's something on for everybody.
Which is amazing. And the thing is, age isn't a limitation. There are great free resource sites, so cost is no longer a factor that you have to pay for subscriptions. And so it really is a different way of communicating. And I have to comment. Now, I don't follow a lot of people on Twitter just because I haven't figured out how to keep them all straight. And I like to read what people post, not only get on about once a day. If I had, you know, 1,000 people posting 100 times a day or whatever, that's a tad overwhelming. So I'm still learning. But where I'm going with it is the tweet you posted about a half an hour before our interview about your communication. Let me flip it because I kept it up so that I could say, now, of course, now, you know, you get too many windows open and you go, there it is. There's Twitter. It said, don't fix your communication problem by not communicating.
Yeah.
Which is a great spark.
Do I know what
to
that means?
About, yes, please do. Share.
Well, where that came from, it actually came from a little bit of a longer blog post, but that one sentence out of it sort of struck me. Very often, like in organizations or even in families or nonprofit organizations, churches, because we don't fully communicate things, when people misunderstand things, we say, oh, well, that just doesn't work to tell them that, so we're not going to tell them. And in particular, I was talking about for succession planning in organizations, very often they have this process that's behind the shield, behind the curtain, defining high potentials. And the excuse we give for not telling high potentials their high potentials is we don't want them to get the wrong idea. Well, to me, that's a communication problem. If you don't know how to have a good and constructive conversation with someone that you regard so highly that they might be a high potential, and so they're solving the communication problem by not telling them. And I think that is just idiotic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that came from.
Oh, well, and that is a good story and a good point about it's like, you know, not choosing is choosing.
Right, exactly. It's exactly right.
And so, yeah, that doesn't always help. I'm going to go back through my list of questions and see, because I knew this would be a blast talking to you. I read you had put a link on Twitter to an article you wrote about a stop on a book tour that really didn't go so well.
Oh, yeah.
That's my nice way of saying it. And for some people, that may have been a situation that they just said, okay, I'm done. So
yeah.
How did you take that negative situation of pretty much not talking to anybody at the stop on your book tour and turn it into something positive?
Yeah, so that was a very humiliating experience. So luckily, it was during the motorcycle book tour, and it was towards the end. Luckily, I had lots of good experiences. And I think every author is going to have the book signing where nobody comes. Well, this was in a Barnes & Noble in Eastern Washington. And it's not just that one or two people came, Melanie. Nobody came, right? So an entire hour, there were lots of people in the store. It's not like the store was empty, but nobody came to talk to me. Nobody was interested in what I had. And I was sitting there, and because it was my motorcycle tour, I had this yellow motorcycle jacket and this yellow motorcycle helmet like a beacon to me. And it was, so it was like this humiliating experience. So what I did was, because I didn't know what to do, I didn't know whether to look at people, I didn't know whether to approach them, I didn't know whether to smile when it was obviously I was having a pathetic time. So I started writing, and I actually started observing this hour. And that's how come I was able to write the essay, which was called Attention Shoppers, which is sort of a sarcastically dark, comedic look at this hour of my life. And so I think the way that I was able to do that was to not only write about it, and sort of that was sort of the cathartic, the purging of it. But the other thing is, at the end of the essay, I actually say my lessons learned. I should have known better. This was a city that I knew nobody. I had no blog readers. I hadn't set up any kind of publicity. And so why would anyone even know I was coming? Why would they care? So I could point to, and not take it personally, the things that I could have done differently to make people show up to that. So I think both of those things. First of all, purging the emotion in writing is the way that I did it. And two, really thinking through how it all happened. And then the third thing is it's really not the end of the world to have an hour where you're ignored.
Well, and you made it productive. And I would add to that, you have a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
And so in that process of not taking it, it's all about me, which a lot of us do, and that's a natural first reaction. It's like, okay, it's just me. Do I smell? Do I what? You know, and be able to go, okay, now wait, what lessons can I learn from this? How can I share this experience that will benefit other people? And you did that so, so well. So thank you for sharing that article, because I don't know that I would have found it had you not put that link in Twitter.
Oh, sure, sure. I'm glad. I hope anyone who's a writer out there, send me an email. I'll be happy to send you the link on it, because it's just, I think it's something we should all be prepared for, and the way that we can reduce the chances that we're going to have another experience or an experience like that one is to better prepare and make sure that you only go where you know you've got readers.
Yeah, and that really, really does help. I hadn't read Hip and Sage. Who were the readers you had in mind when you wrote that book?
Hip and Sage is really for two main audiences. The first audience is professionals who are 40-something and older, who want to continue to be relevant and competitive in the workplace. So it's actually for the people who are sage, probably, but may or may not yet be hip. And so that's probably a big chunk of who it's for. So you could generalize and say it's for the baby boomers, but I'd even say it goes a little bit older and a little bit younger than that. Anyone who's got enough experience that they feel like they might be a little bit left behind. The second audience is for professionals and organizations who have to help teams work together. So that could be training professionals, OD professionals, human resource professionals, or even department managers who happen to have a broad mix of people who report to them. And they're trying to figure out, how do I make this group of people who have not a lot in common, how do I help them connect, build relationships, and be productive? So that would kind of be the second group.
I'm seeing a book coming for a book study at the credit union where I spend part of my work life. And because we're talking about, you know, wanting a new book for a book study, and this may be the one. So,
well, it's a good one, Melody, because it's funny, too. I know you don't have it, and I apologize for that. I was hoping that the publisher would send it to you, but it's a pretty good one for, like, a group topic because there's actually some funny bits in there. So it's not all just sort of drudgery.
Oh, and that makes it more memorable, too, from the learning perspective. And you've already talked a little bit about some of the lessons that are in Hip and Sage. Is there something in particular that you could share from the book that you think?
Yeah, and if it's possible, I'd love to share just a short story about Tony Bennett. Would that be okay?
Sure. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. And it's actually at the beginning of the book because I think it's the most important story in the book because it sets up the whole mindset, if you will, of what it means to be hip and sage. This is a very, very quick story, but it's powerful. I was watching the Sunday morning news show that Charles Kuralt does on Sunday mornings, and they were doing a feature about Katie Lang, the singer Katie Lang. And years earlier, she had done a collaboration with Tony Bennett. And during the interview, they asked her what it was like to work with the great and legendary crooner Tony Bennett. And then the video moved over, and prior to the interview, they had obviously interviewed Tony Bennett, and they had asked him the following question. They had asked him how the compilation CD with Katie Lang came about. And then they cut to a clip of video with him sharing how it came about. That video was only about 30 seconds, but it changed my view about Hip and Sage. And so I'm going to paraphrase what he said. What he said was that he was backstage at the Grammys, and he saw Katie Lang, and he walked up to her, and he extended his hand, and he said, "Hi, I'm Tony Bennett, and I'm a big fan of yours, and I would love to work with you one day." That's the end of the clip. So the reason why this struck me, Melanie, is for two reasons. One is backstage at the Grammys, Tony Bennett does not need to walk up to anyone and say, "I'm Tony Bennett." Like, if there's any audience that knows exactly who Tony Bennett is, it's going to be the people who are backstage at the Grammys, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the fact that he did it with such humility and with such grace. And then the second thing that really struck me is that he basically said, "I'm a fan of yours, and I would love to work with you one day." And can you imagine what it must have been like to be Katie Lang in that moment?
Awestruck. That's the first word that comes to mind.
That's right. And it's and not only that, you must just be filled with so much pride and like, wow, Tony Bennett is a fan of mine. And so, you know, I was thinking it through, and I thought, well, you know, what if we had like a 55-year-old engineering manager or a bank branch manager or someone who walked up to one of the new folks who, you know, they just graduated from college not too long ago and they're learning all kinds of cool stuff. So, you know, walking up to that person saying, "Hey, you know, welcome aboard. I hear that you worked on the XYZ program project. I'm really fascinated by that. I hope that we can work together. I'd love to learn some things from you." I mean, what if that happened? What if we did it?
Well, and interestingly, we've really been working on a mentoring program to actually help promote some of those relationships,
mm-hmm.
because they don't always happen as naturally as we
want. Yeah. Well, and I think one of the reasons we get in our own way, so the reason I like the Tony Bennett story is because it turns around what it means to not only influence others and mentor others, but to be mentored by younger people. And if we're trying to be hip, we actually do need to be mentored by younger people. But to say and to be humble and to reach out instead of thinking, okay, I'm the sage one, they need to reach to me. I'm the one that's mentoring them. But to sort of also look at it in the other view, and I think that's what helps create the connection and the relationship and the trust, is when we, the older, more experienced, more sage professionals, can be like Tony Bennett was.
Yes, and so that the relationship truly is a mutually beneficial one.
That's right.
Instead of always thinking that the mentor is dispensing wisdom, And
right.
he is just a sponge.
That's
and
right.
we really, and see, this is going to be an awesome match because that is the model that we're using. Is the goal is that it's mutually beneficial and
yeah.
so that both are learning. See, timing is perfect. I truly believe that. And so I'm glad that we decided to go ahead and do this interview tonight because one of the challenges for my listeners to know was that, you know, A, I hadn't read the book, and B, it's like, and I'm on new allergy meds, which my regular listeners know, and so I have what I call brain fog from time to time. This is the first year I've ever had to get a prescription for allergy medication, and so I now, as someone who trains and teaches about the brain, have a new understanding for the process of changes in your memory. So
oh.
I had neglected to email Lisa last week and confirm that you were indeed going to do the show, so it's yesterday. When I'm emailing Lisa going, are we still on for tomorrow? And, oh, and I didn't get the book, and I'm totally comfortable with that because you and I have actually had a conversation, and I've read enough of your work that I knew we could fill an hour.
Yeah.
And so I'm so glad that we did because I have learned so much in this conversation, and I know that my listeners will as well, so that's doubly exciting. They'll have some ideas to spark some action in the week ahead, and we always invite them to do that. And we actually have 13 minutes left because I did a panic at the beginning when I said 45 minutes because whenever I have a guest, I do an hour show. When it's just me talking, I do 45 minutes. And I've forgotten to change it to an hour, so I'm going, I wonder if I can do it while I'm doing the interview. So what's the worst thing that could happen? The good news is I now know I can do it during a show. So we have 13
okay,
more
good.
Minutes, Lisa, I can ask you a few more questions.
Excellent.
One of the things that I had sent you is something I would probably ask about has to do with living your passions and being clear about what it is you love to do. And we've talked a little bit about that, about your passion for writing and motorcycles. Are there other passions that you would say you really are living in your life right now?
Yeah, you know, I think I recently moved from Seattle to Cincinnati, and I did so to join an organization. It's a small, it's a boutique consulting firm. Prior to that, I was actually a one-woman band, if you will. And the reason that I did that is because, you know, as an introvert, I was very comfortable sort of doing my own thing for years. But what I was missing from that was the collaboration within, you know, for projects. I mean, when you're a consultant, your clients don't necessarily want you to collaborate. They want you to have the solutions. So I was kind of missing that. And so the move here to Cincinnati had two things about it that are really aligned with who I think I am when I'm doing my best work. And one is that it is working with a small group. I'm an introvert, so I don't necessarily want to go to parties every day. But if there's two or three professionals that I can really sort of put heads together and have a really open, provocative conversation with, I love having a great conversation with folks. And so that's one of the things is that I'm able to – we're actually building a business together. And I like the notion of a small group of people in these tough economic times. You know, it's not the easiest time to be a business consultant. But what that means is that requires the very best of us, and it requires us to be creative, and it requires us to be more collaborative. So I think this notion of a small group sort of think tank, if you will, think tank is sort of a poshy word. I don't want to use that word. More of just a collaborative, a provocative collaboration. If I can spend each and every day, just a little bit of each and every day, with a small group of people trying to think of the best way to do something, that to me is really, really fun. And so that's one thing. And then I would say the other thing that's aligned with the move here is that I want to do – I'm doing a lot more interesting work with helping companies create an online learning environment. And so for me, like the fact that I created this management social network is all about – me trying to explore that space more fully, and then as the catalyst I like to be, say, okay, well, how can I help others in a simple way create more better relationships with their workplace or even their nonprofit organizations? And so I want to be doing more work with organizations that are doing good things to change the world, like nonprofits and governments. They're probably couple of my two favorite types of organizations to work with, although I work with all kinds, but just because I think the work they're doing is so important. And so healthcare too, I think healthcare is a real area where we need to have great innovation, and it's such a tough environment to work in. And so I have the greatest respect for folks who take on that kind of world because it's complex and gooky. And so those would be the two things.
Awesome. Did you ever, in that process when you were thinking about the move, because often when I work with the passion test and work with clients about that, talk about, well, you know, I really love this. I just don't know if I could make a living at it. I just don't know if I could, you know, pay me to do that. Did those thoughts ever cross your mind as you were thinking about shifting from your success as an independent consultant to move into this collaborative relationship?
Well, certainly those things always do. And, of course, it certainly did when I decided to go from having a real job to having no real job when I jumped ship on the corporate world. But, you know, the perspective I've always had is that I know that, you know, if disaster strikes and all of a sudden nobody decides they're going to hire management consultants anymore, I'll do something else, and it won't be the end of the world. So I try not to have a fatalistic view of things that are not fatalistic. So I try to put in check my fears, because it's really, truly not the end of the world. If so what that does is that takes the pressure off me and actually allows me to manifest what I'm really trying to manifest, which is an amazing work life, an amazing home life, and amazing hobbies. And so I try to put that in check. There was a great book written by Gus Lee called Courage, The Backbone of Leadership. If you're one of those worry warts that sort of puts a disproportionate amount of fear and anxiety on things, that would be a really great book for you, because he sort of gives you some ways of thinking about how to knock back down to reality what we're really worried about. And so I try to do that. But certainly, yeah, there's certainly fear, and there's still fear right now. I mean, the economy's improving a little bit, but, you know, so, but again, I think it helps us be more creative.
Well, and I think you make a very good point, which is looking at it as a step to whatever's next, and this will work the way it works, and then if it doesn't work, then I'll go on to whatever's next. And
that's right.
Very, very different idea. I did a session today called Switch, using Yvonne Oswald's model from Every Word Has Power, because people will often say, Melanie, you talk about having a positive attitude and choosing a positive perspective and using positive language. Well, yeah, that's all well and good, but how do you do it? You know, because I'm not born that way. And so we did a session and talked about how the power of language can make a difference, not only for yourself, but for the people that you serve in your work and in your family life, and some of the research behind it. And it was just so funny to watch the light bulbs that would pop off as people were making some connections about how do you language things, like no problem being one of those things that people just throw out there. And it's like, okay, the brain doesn't process not. We know that. It jumps over it. So what do you hear? Problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Language is critical.
Yes, and it's something that, again, often isn't taught, and we just pick up conversational patterns from people around us, often without being conscious of it.
Yeah.
And so it's that idea of how do you talk to yourself, and how do you encourage yourself? And, you know, sometimes as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, collaborate. I am an extrovert, so collaboration is really important in my life, and it's making sure that there are ways that I can connect with different people. And so I think having that self-awareness is important as well, and that journey through your work life that you've had and pulling the pieces that have helped you become more knowledgeable and with your fear, and then sharing it with others has helped them be able to say, well, hey, Lisa did it, and now she said, well, just, you know, here's this path to becoming a better manager. Or
Think, too, that It is about that self-awareness of what we all need. So although I really love to collaborate, then there's going to be times that I need to be reflective and on my own as well. And if you're someone who really enjoys collaborating a lot, then I do think that, you know, you may want to check out The Social Network, because that's all about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And to realize that, you know, for every person who succeeds at doing whatever it is, then there are more people to go see it works and see it
works.
Right. But it's not a fluke anymore. And so it, you can then begin to bring more people through that learning curve in their lives, both professionally and personally, which is so exciting. And your writing is a great way to do that, Lisa, as well as your talking and your speaking and your blogging and, oh, my God. You know, as people will often say to me, and I'm sure they say it to you, do you sleep, Lisa?
No, I don't. Really, I don't. But you know what the other thing is, because I think that's another thing that keeps people away from a lot of these online
mm-hmm.
technologies. They fear that their life is going to be totally wiped away. You know, you can spend as much time as you want on it. I probably spend an hour a day on it.
Oh, and that's an amazing point because, yeah, when you start talking social networks and Twitter and blogging and people are like, good grief, do you have time to do anything else? And
yeah,
so
I don't want that to get in the way, right? I don't want people to say that's why I'm not going to explore it. Because
right.
you control your time.
There you go. And there are some tools and strategies, so you don't have to open up four or five different applications to do updates.
That's true.
So learning about those, since that was one of my fears with getting involved with the social networks and Twitter and da-da-da-da, it's a ton factor. So it helps to hear people go, yeah, it can be done, and you just monitor your time and there are ways you can do it. So every reinforcement helps people get one step closer to taking the action that they've been wondering whether or not they might succeed at. And there's always that, you know, what's the worst that would happen?
Right.
You know, the worst that could happen is, well, I realized I spent 3 hours on it one day and didn't like it. So I'm
Yeah. The fears are totally unfounded. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, Lisa, we've got about 3 minutes left in our hour. Do you believe that? Time flies when we're having fun.
Yeah, it does.
So in our final few minutes for our listeners, and I have listeners who are high school age, college graduates, seasoned professionals, retirees, so we've got the full gamut generationally. But in our last, well, now 2 minutes, what are some key takeaways that you would want listeners to be able to walk away and use from your life experience?
Well, I think two things. One is be focused and in action a little bit every day. That's probably the greatest lesson in life I've learned, that as long as I do a little bit each day, and I'm talking 5, 10, 15 minutes, no big deal, be focused and in action a little bit every day. And when it comes to some of these online technologies, for example, I would say fuel your passions as a way to learn some of these new technologies. So, for example, if you're a Charlie Rose fan, well, all his videos are uploaded online. Use your fanship of Charlie Rose to learn about the new technologies. So instead of just saying, oh, I have to go to where people who I don't understand listen, if you're an NPR fan, go to NPR. If you're a particular band, go to there. So learn these through your passions. That way you have fun doing it.
That is amazing. Thank you so much, Lisa. It has been, like I knew it would be, a fun and informative and exciting hour with you. Thanks so much for spending your time with us.
Melanie, I enjoyed it very much, and I hope that your listeners did as well.
And I'm sure that you will probably hear from some of them. So do check out either Management Craft, pick up Hip and Sage, or 2 Weeks to a Breakthrough. I know, and I hadn't seen 2 Weeks to a Breakthrough, so I was doing my research. And with some of the things going on with my business and my work, I'll be checking that one out too. So thanks so much, Lisa, for sharing with us and for the wonderful work that you do to make a positive difference in the world, because it is making a difference. And I appreciate it, as do the many people whose lives you touch. So you rock, Lisa. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And the last thing that I always close with is take an action on something you heard. Lisa shared great ideas and strategies with you tonight. Take an action on something in the week ahead to work on a fear, to get a step closer to accomplishing something you've dreamt of doing, to go out and check out some online tools, and to just do it. So thanks for being with us, and until next week, make that positive difference in the lives that you touch, and stay safe. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life day.